You are Locked On Celtics, your daily Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
I'm so hyped right now. Anything's possible. Oh, my mama. Oh, my mama made it, ma. Anything's possible.
Rainy days, jump shot, fade away. This the best Celtics podcast day to day. I get excited about it like when Tatum play a Jalen on the breakaway, a Kyrie when he make a trade, and nothing like the terrible analysts on the TV. So in depth that after you play it, you gotta repeat. So in depth they might do an hour about the D-League. So in depth you probably should pay him, but it's a freebie. Yeah, Corrales, Packard, and J. King. Locked on, trying to get the 18th ring. And well wishes go to Gordon. Listen, after every game is very important, Millie.
Hey there, welcome back to the Locked On Celtics Podcast here on the Locked On Podcast Network. Thank you for making this part of your regular routine. I am John Corrales of the Rain and Jays, here by myself for the next couple of days because I just recorded a big podcast on the G League with play-by-play voice of the main Red Claws, Chris Sendenka, also of the PM Jab. I am a regular guest of the PM Jab, so I know Chris very well. We had a big conversation about the G League and Abdel Nader, Gershon Yabusele. And then really we dove into the G League as a whole, the G League versus the NCAA. We're going to split this into two shows. And I'll give you the first part of it today, obviously the second part tomorrow. And then Jay and I and Sam Packard will get into the final two pieces of our schedule breakdown. I know we're trying to do it all last week, but you know, things happen. It couldn't work out. So we'll get to that this week. We'll finish off our schedule breakdown this week. But this week you get four Locked On Celtics podcasts. So part one will be my conversation with Chris Sendenka. We're going to break this into two pieces, like I said. So today we're talking about Abdel Nader and why he didn't pan out. We're going to talk about Gershon Yabusele and what he needs to do to pan out. And we're going to talk about the G League and how they need to kind of, grow as a minor league. And that's going to take us into the NCAA, and that's going to be tomorrow's show. So, for now, here's my conversation with Maine Red Claws play-by-play voice, Chris Sendenka. All right, Chris, we're ready to dive into this new NBA season, new crop in Boston, potentially some new guys coming up in Maine. First of all, let's get your impressions of the Celtics. You're always asking me the questions, so it's nice to like flip this around and ask you, what's your impression on the Celtics move so far this season? Pretty much standing pat.
Yeah, I thought it was the right move, to be honest with you, John, because as all of us have been saying, we haven't seen last year's team yet.
We
were so excited about that. And the way that this team finished the season without their two biggest stars and, you know, Marcus Smart coming back from injury too and showing what they can do. And I think just the re-signing of Marcus Smart was absolutely huge and key this offseason, as well as getting Baines back. I don't think we're talking enough about, you know, that move as well. So I loved it. I thought this offseason was exactly what they needed to do and kind of let everyone else run around and potentially sign big names or, you know, seeing LeBron go to the Western Conference. I think the Celtics are really in good position here moving forward.
So we are the podcast that's so in depth, we might do an hour about the G League, and that's what we're going to do right now. So you've watched these guys. You know, here's a name I want to bring up right away. Abdel Nader, who I think is the quintessential basketball equivalent of the quadruple A player. Can you tell me like what you saw from him in Maine and maybe shed some light on why he never could translate to the NBA?
You know, John, I think you hit it on the head. He's the, for, you know, to put it into baseball terms, like you said, he's the guy that was in Pawtucket for the majority of his career. And when he got those calls up to the Sox, just never showed it. And unfortunately for Nader, he just, I don't know if the game was just too quick for him or what it was, but when he was a, a rookie. You know, he ended up being rookie of the year in the G League, and he was outstanding. He was always a pretty good shooter, and I think that really translated from Iowa State up. You know, he really worked on his defense because that was a big concern, I think, for the team coming in. But I think where he lacked, and especially with the size and the athleticism he has, John, is that he just didn't really have that finishing touch. And getting to the rack, you'd see turnovers, you would see mishandled plays, you'd see bad passes, you wouldn't see finishing. And so I think for someone like him, where he has that explosive step, he needs to be able to finish better. And unfortunately, we never saw it in the NBA. And quite frankly, we didn't really see it from a consistent standpoint in the G League, either up in Maine. And you know, his rookie year, that was a big problem, especially turnovers. And then I think defensively, he was pretty good, but what certainly could have been better. And then last year, when he got a few assignments, when he was coming down from Boston Celtics, it was sloppy. It was sloppy. And, you know, some games were decent, but you just saw some of those same sloppy tactics. So my guess is that the Celtics just, they saw that and they probably just figured that it wasn't going to work, which is too bad because he was a really nice kid. I think he works hard. I don't think it was an effort issue. I just think at the end of the day, he just wasn't good enough, especially for a Celtics team going for a championship.
Yeah, you know, it's one of those things. I always say situation matters. Maybe if he's on a team that was a little bit younger, and now that he's in Cleveland, who knows? Maybe they'll give him a little bit more chance to kind of figure out what he's going to do and give him a chance to figure it out on the NBA level. Look, for a guy like Abdel Nader, there has to be a lot of money for him to make overseas. It's not like he's going to be broke. He can make a very, very nice living in many of those leagues overseas.
Yeah, and you're right, John, because he can play elite level European. So you're talking Spain, Germany, Italy, easily. He could certainly go in any of those, you know, leagues. Boy, you're going to get in the champion, you know, the Champions League style teams, and that's not a problem. But going back to what you're saying about, you know, the right time, maybe it just wasn't the right time in Boston. I think you're right about that, because if he's in Boston when it's the first year that Isaiah Thomas takes his team to the postseason, he probably has more of an opportunity to play, just because, again, a little bit more raw of a team. He didn't have the structure yet. Obviously, Kyrie wasn't there yet. So ultimately, I think it was just a situation where the Celtics have to kind of pick and choose wisely of their squad. And if you're going to be 12 or 13 on the bench, they need to trust that you can go in and play either 2 minutes or 20 minutes, depending on the situation. I just don't think they have that trust.
Let's move on to a guy here that is, I don't want to say polarizing yet, because right now Weird Celtics Twitter loves Gershon Yabusele, but or they love a certain aspect of Gershon Yabusele. But
right.
but as a basketball player, and I bring this up this particular way because someone on Twitter posed me a question of your least favorite Celtic, and one person tweeted, and I hesitate to react to one particular tweet, but the way it was framed was very interesting to me. Yabu was drafted because they thought maybe they could stash him. And he's 23 yeah. years old, and they thought maybe you can develop him overseas a couple years, not guarantee his contract just yet, push that off a couple years. And Yabu was just like, nah, I'm coming to the NBA. And so now they've added him to this mix. If Yabu had just stayed overseas, this whole luxury tax thing wouldn't be an issue. There would be a lot of different things going on with the Celtics. Some things might be better. Maybe some things would be worse. But Yabu's here. He's gotten a lot of run with the Red Claws. I've seen him in Summer League. He's trying to work on a few things. He's probably, realistically speaking, 10th, 11th, 12th on the Celtics in their rotation. So from what you saw from him in Maine, where he got more reps and more opportunities, what does he need to work on? What does he need to become? What does he need to do to actually stick around for the length of his rookie deal and eventually become a contributor to the Celtics?
I like that you started that by talking about they like certain aspects And the only thing I thought about was the ass part of aspects. Gershon, listen, he's a fan favorite in Portland. That shouldn't surprise anyone. He is a good size, especially for the G League. I mean, the G League has gotten incrementally better over the years, but you know, there's a couple things that really stand out is that if you're a good big, you're not going to be in the G League. You're going to be in the NBA. And so most good bigs, or most bigs in the G League are massive projects. So when Gershon's going to go up against guys around his size or maybe a little bit taller, he's just better. I mean, he's frankly a better player. And so he has that ability to play in the NBA. The question is, again, from a consistency standpoint, he takes, you know, he I know they want him to shoot the three because everyone in the Boston Celtics shoots the three, but
sure.
I think at times he rushes those shots. He doesn't set. That is a massively raw part of his game still. There's no doubt about that. I don't think he's as good of a rebounder than he needs to be at this point. I think he could be stronger. I think he could be more aggressive. And I don't mean from an offensive standpoint, because we all know how the Celtics, you know, they're not a crash the board team, and that's fine. But I just mean from a defensive rebounding standpoint, he can get lost down low. You know, I think for him, it was, I don't want to see attitude. I think his attitude was always good when he came up, but I think there are some, I think when you watch him sometimes, John, you wonder where his head is at from the standpoint of, did he think he was going to come over to the NBA after a year of playing, in, you know, overseas, or, and, you know, he played a little bit in China when they stashed him. I just don't know if he thought maybe he would have been more balanced and ready to go. And I think he kind of got lost a little bit there from the learning curve. And, you know, for Gershon, I think that really showed probably more this past year than it did the year before. And so I think this was a big summer for him. Like you said, he was working on a lot of things in summer league. He is somebody that I think from a Celtics standpoint, this is it. This is the make or break for him. And, you know, for someone being that first round pick and having the ability and having that big body and obviously trying to stay in shape. And I think he's doing a better job of that this offseason than he did last year too. And that's helped because, you know, with that big frame, he's already had some lower body issues. And that's going to be something that I'm sure every team, especially the Celtics, not his own team, are going to be looking at. So for him to just stay fit, understand kind of that role to start with. And I think, you know, he has that, you know, I think he has the ability to be a decent role player for this Celtics team. The question is, you know, will, you know, I guess the question is, will he fit the role that he needs to be able to do kind of right away? And he fit the role most games when he came up here because he was going to be the star. He was going to be a guy who was going to get tons of touches. He'd get the shots that he needed. And he played the offense pretty well. And for anyone who's wondering, the Red Claws play the, you know, the same offensive sets, same defensive sets that the Boston Celtics do. Even though not everyone on the team is a Celtics player, you know, they're still getting that good look. And you have right. coaches who are all in the Celtics program. So you're going to have that same kind of offense. And I think for Gershon, it worked well. The question again, though, is, you know, is he going to be tough enough? Is he going to be fit enough? And is he going to be, you know, is he going to be able to stay patient enough to be the kind of player they need him to be?
That brings me into a conversation that I'm dying to have. I've been dying to have. When you talk about the Celtics sets, the offensive sets, the defensive sets, the Celtics own the Red Claws. The Celtics can send a player down, quote unquote, down up to Maine and know that he's working on the fundamentals that they need to have him work on, get used to certain plays, and when he comes back to Boston, be it Gershon, be it, you know, if they send Robert Williams to Maine, they know that they're going to play him the way that they need to play him. Not every team has a G League affiliate. Not every team has this thing. And now that the NCAA has come out and said that players can now sign with agents, now players can go through the draft and they can go back to school even if they had an agent, I'm dying to talk about the G League as a full, honest-to-God minor league system. So from your perspective, do you think that can happen? Do you what's this is a very big, long, open-ended question.
I know where you're going, though.
What's right? What's wrong with the G League? How can they make this? I want this to become a pseudo like minor league system like baseball has without eight levels of it. How can we get there?
Sure. Well, make no mistake about it. The NCAA's move was a clear shot at the G League and overseas. This is the NCAA feeling the pressure of how things are going to be going in the future. And they are, you know, taking their steps to defend, you know, their honor, defend and try to make sure kids' first option is still going to the NCAA. So that's exactly what this move was, because they feel threatened about what the future is going to be. And the future might be the G League for a lot of these kids. So we'll start with the good. I think over the last couple of years, specifically, the G League has set themselves up to be a much better league for young players and for the NBA to utilize for assignments. And one of the biggest things, John, is that teams, like you mentioned, that most teams have bought in. I think, gosh, I cannot remember, but I think we're at two. I think it's only two teams that don't have a team now. I think we're up to 28 squads. And I'm pretty sure every team that – or the two teams that don't have teams, and I think it's Denver and Portland, but don't quote me on that, I believe they're ready to go. I think it just depends on what year they're going to set it up. But within a couple of years, you're going to have a full one-to-one, which is great. Now, that doesn't mean every player on the roster is a player for – said team, like the Boston Celtics, they don't have player rights to everyone on the main red clause. But when they have to send somebody down, or when you have a two-way player, those are going to be players on, those are Boston Celtics players. But you also have, and I'll explain the two-way in just a second for those who don't know it, you also have what's called an affiliate player. So take example, last year, Daniel Dixon. Daniel Dixon was an affiliate player for the Boston Celtics. He was in camp last year with Boston, and he was cut by Boston. But since he was with Boston in fall camp, the main red clause had first rights to sign him, and that's called an affiliate player. So that player doesn't go into a draft. They'll go into essentially a system where if the affiliate player, the affiliate team wants that player, and it's usually the Boston Celtics telling the main red clause, hey, we want this player. And
right.
You have these affiliate type players. Now they're free agents. So if Daniel Dixon last year, if Atlanta wanted him, they could sign him. It's not technically a Boston Celtics player, but it's an affiliate style, which helps those G League teams kind of build a roster of players who will know the sets already, if that makes sense.
But these players come in just intro. I want to make sure that we're clear.
Sure.
The players, teams do this. They bring players in to camp specifically to cut them, specifically to make them affiliate players.
Correct. Yep.
So
it's like practice squad.
Yeah. So they sign
practice squad in the NFL.
Yeah. Yep. So they sign a guy. They say, we're going to cut you. We're going to make you go to the Red Claws. And that's just a chance for us to kind of keep an eye on you. Can a team sign any other team after the Celtics cut him, after he goes to the Red Claws? Can another team come in and say, we like what you're doing, we're going to sign you?
Yes. Yep. So, it's like a practice squad player in the NFL where those players are practicing with a team, but any team can come in and sign those guys.
Right.
And so they are assigned, or not assigned, but they're picked up, their contract is picked up by the main red clause. And if the Atlanta Hawks want to sign them, that's great. They'll go to the Atlanta Hawks. Now, let's say Atlanta signs this kid on a 10-day and they release him, the main red clause, again, have first rights to sign that kid.
Okay.
Because he was an affiliate player. So that's kind of how that works. So you have these affiliate contracts, and that's really helped because you're getting more interaction between the NBA and the G League, especially during summer league and training camp. And so you have a lot of kids or players, I should say, coming back, coming into the G League with, I know I'm getting old now.
I always call them kids. I call them kids too. I'm with you, man. It's weird, but I do too.
It is weird. Yeah. It's so strange, especially when like you're watching kids, when you're a kid and you're watching guys get drafted and now they're retiring. It's like, oh my God,
I know. I can't tell you. I've had a million conversations this weekend. I have conversations every weekend with people. I'm like, yeah, man, I like that kid. I'm talking like Al Horford, you know, like I just, so, it's, but
funny.
You know, that's, you know, when I'm older than everybody. So everybody's a kid to me. So anyway, continue.
Yeah. So what happens is that you get a better product because these guys have a lot more experience in NBA camps and NBA summer league than they ever had before. And so the G League has really, really prospered from that. And, you know, that's one of the, I think, big reasons why you're seeing much better competition and you're seeing why the NBA is much more, the NBA teams are much more in tune with what the G League can be for a product. So that's one big thing. And that came in, I think, 3 years ago now. And that's been a major, major factor. I mean, that's more important than the G League draft is at this point, because, you know, if the Celtics bring in four guys that they know they're kind of going to cut to start with, then, you know, the Red Claws know that they're going to have, you know, they're four pretty decent players coming in. And more than likely, the head coach, who's Brandon Bailey now, and it was Scott Morrison for years, who's now an assistant with the Celtics, these coaches work with these guys throughout summer. So they're already very comfortable with those players as the season's about to begin. So that's a big, big factor. Now, the other big thing is the two-way player, which came in last year. Much like the NHL, you have a contract that works for the minor leagues. You have a contract that works for if you're up in the big leagues. And last year, the Boston Celtics had Jabari Bird and Kadeem Allen on those. And so you have, and I don't know what it is off the top of my head, but it's like 40 days you can play in the NBA, I think. And then the rest of your time, you're down in the G League. And so when you're up in the NBA, you're making a contract that is prorated to the veteran to the rookie minimum, which is like 220 or something like that. And then if you're down in the G League, you're making much more than your standard G League contract. I think they're making about 70,000, which is still not a ton of money, but it's great for, you know, minor leagues, and it's great to see that most teams filled those spots and you know, guys can stay here instead of going overseas and make a little bit of coin, which is great. And I think you're going to start seeing regular contracts come up, which were, you know, when I started 10 years ago, they're probably, you know, maybe $19,000-$20,000 a year. Those have incrementally gone up, and I think you're going to continue to see that, which is solid as well, because they really want this to be a viable option for kids to be able to stay before going overseas or potentially finding a job in the NBA. And so the two-way contract has been a big success. The Celtics will, you know, once again, utilize those this year. I think when you look at, you know, teams around, I don't think there was one team that didn't have at least two guys on those last year. So I think most NBA teams have utilized those, and that's been a really, really big step for the G League. And I think the other thing just quickly is I just think with some of these new roster moves and with every NBA team, practically now every NBA team getting involved, we've seen such a better product at the G League level. I think NBA teams love it because they don't have to worry about going overseas to scout. I think they have a better idea of what the competition level is before a guy's coming overseas too, because you're seeing it right here and they understand who most of these players are. And so I think all of that has really made this a viable option. And you're also seeing guys stay in the league 2 to 3 years longer than they used to at least potentially get an opportunity in the NBA. So all that is probably the positives that you're seeing right now with this G League.
But at the same time,
yep, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry. Were you continuing?
No, go ahead. I will talk about some negatives, but feel free to
no.
To
go
hit
ahead.
On
go ahead.
What,
do the negatives. Do the negatives, because I want to get to the heart of the G League being a full minor league. So I want to get to the negatives, absolutely.
Yeah. Negative is, for the most part, as much as I glowingly talked about the money getting better, it still doesn't compare to a lot of the leagues overseas. So, yeah, I mean, especially the higher-up leagues, they're still going to struggle to get those guys. They still haven't really been able to get kids who haven't really qualified for college. I can't remember his name, but the kid who was thinking about going to Syracuse, who opted out and was thinking about playing in the G League, now it sounds like he's not going to. He's going to have to be at the IMG Academy all year, which that's a huge loss for this league. I mean, those are the kind of guys that they really need to cater to or potentially look at. And over my time, again, 10 years, I think I've seen maybe two of those kids play. And there are more. We just don't really hear about them too much. So they're still not attracting, I think, a certain amount of players that they possibly could. And that's something that they could work on. And I think another negative is how confusing it is, because I understand how confusing all of that explanation I tried to say is, John. There's a lot of different things that go into it. And, you know, just for that purpose, I think it can get a little bit confusing for fans. Like, most fans think that every player on those teams is actually under contract with the Boston Celtics or whatever team it is, because that's how it works in Major League Baseball and the NHL. But with smaller rosters for basketball, you really don't need that many players in the minor leagues. So I think a lot of it is just still a confusion about the league. The officiating can be rather atrocious. And as much as it's fun to be an experimental league with rules, it can also, some of the rules have just been absolutely downright ridiculous. So I remember one game, I think there were 7 challenges.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like a college
That's
football
bad.
Game.
That's bad. I mean, look,
so there's some stuff that really they still need to work on, but it's growing. No one probably thought it would get to this size. So it's been good.
Right. And look, I do want to say that when we're talking about the negatives of the G League, at this point, we're getting into the G League is also an experimental thing for the NBA. And it's also a place where refs are learning the same way players are learning, and coaches
Absolutely.
Are learning
Yep.
the same. So everybody has to understand that when it comes to the G League, it's not like it's polished in any way. There's a lot.
No.
There's a lot that goes along with being in the G League. The money is an interesting thing, and one point that I wanted to bring up, because they just gave these guys a raise, and they gave them the raise because it fell in line with what the 2K League guys were making. And
right.
I don't know if you've heard anything or felt anything, but do you know of any like consternation amongst G League players? We're like, oh great, now we get paid as much as the guys who play video games.
I haven't done, to be honest with you. I've not heard one bit, and quite frankly, in all the years I've had, I have not heard a lot of complaining about the money. Most of these guys are pretty humble. They understand that it is a minor league, and they understand that it's not easy to get up to the level where they're at. And they also understand that, you know, the demand of viewers, at least over the years, has not been great. I mean, 2K League probably gets better ratings than G League games would, probably pretty easily. So it's all economics, and I think most of these guys get it, and they all know that ultimately they'll make money if they make the show.
Yeah, I guess.
I know. Believe me, I'm the same way, and I'm sure a lot of them look at it like it's crazy, but I just mean from a public standpoint, I think they do a pretty good job.
But here's,
so maybe I should clarify it that way.
No, that's fine. But like, here's where the G League is. They are counting on the allure of playing in the NBA. The G League is a place the G League is a place for a lot of players. There's so many different kinds of players in the G League. There are the guys that were drafted mostly probably below 10 and that are getting their reps. There are guys that were drafted or like you said, the affiliate players. There's that tier. The guys who are good enough to get into a camp, good enough to kind of sniff the NBA, and they get there. They're at that same level, the two-way players. Maybe the two-way players are a little bit above them. And then the fourth tier probably is the guys who are drafted. The G League draft where, all right, we've got to fill these rosters. We need players who are available to show up. Is there anybody that I'm missing? I think those four tiers kind of fill it.
Yeah, there's also the friends with Marcus Smart tier. No, and I'm kidding a little bit. Trey Davis, who actually was in summer league with Boston, good buddies with Marcus, and got to see Marcus come up a couple times. But but there's always like one guy who's friends with somebody in the big league club who's getting an opportunity. And I'll say this: Trey Davis absolutely deserved the opportunity. He was a lot of fun to watch last year. Great shooter. But, that was mostly in jest. But no, I think you pretty much hit it on the head. And I guess the other one would be the tier of guys who are coming back from overseas looking for jobs when 10-day season starts. You see that a lot, too,
where all
of a sudden the waiver wire kind of fires up a little bit because two or three dudes are coming over from Europe or Asia because leagues are always ending at strange times, or guys lose their jobs, or you know, maybe they didn't get paid in whatever country they were living in. There's so many different situations, and that's kind of the gamble that you can going to some of these countries that aren't, you know, Spain or Germany or something like that. So I would say that's the only other tier, is to add in the waiver wire guys coming over from overseas.
Okay, that makes sense. But so my point in all of this is the G League is populated with a lot of guys who are here just because – and I spoke to Jabari Bird at Summer League, who said, I'm an NBA player. I'm not going overseas. They're full of guys like that. They're full of guys who are like, I'm actively passing on an opportunity to make money, to stay in the United States, to work in the systems of these teams, to be kind of, it's kind of like when I was playing and they said, when you come out of the game, sit as close to the coach as possible, because when somebody screws up, he'll grab the closest person next to him and say, get in here and take him out. Like, that's what these guys are doing. They're sitting as close to the coach as possible in the G League, making crap money and playing in a system that's familiar to these NBA teams. I mean, how much longer can these guys do this before the G League just ceases to be that kind of option? And what I'm saying is, at some point, the G League has to start paying these guys some decent money.
I agree. And that's on the NBA, really. Maine is not technically owned by the Boston Celtics, and I think there are two or three teams that aren't owned, but the Celtics run their basketball operations. The Celtics are going to pay for their contracts. So even though it's not, you know, it's locally owned still, the operations part is essentially leased out, I guess you could say, by the Celtics. So just like every other NBA team, it's going to end up being the NBA's decision to start paying these players more. So for this to be the viable option that I think it needs to be, and listen, Major League Baseball is going through this right now with minor league baseball, and you know, something where it's gone all the way to Congress when we talk about their contracts. So I hope that, you know, within 5 years or whatever like that, you know, this is a decent option for guys to make a living, because really, are you really making a living in the G League right now for 2 or 3 years? Yes, because you're, what, 21, 22 years old, and that's kind of how we all did it. But right. ultimately, you can't be a 5 to 10 year vet when it comes to this. You can be a 5 to 10 year vet in Europe. You can be a 5 to 10 year vet in China, in Japan, sure, but not here, unless you're in the NBA. Absolutely. And yeah, I mean, you want to talk about that being a massive negative part. Yeah, it's always going to come back to the money, no question.
And that's the thing. Like, and it goes back to why every team doesn't have its own minor league affiliate. That why they don't have 30 teams that have rosters full of guys that make okay money, that can be called up and sent down and all of that stuff. I mean, do you think that that type of system, that baseball type of system where you call a player up and then send him back down and he makes enough money to kind of hang there for a little while, you think that's possible? Do you, and if you do, how far off do you think that can be?
I think it's possible, absolutely. Now, do I think – I think it's possible not to the point where every player is essentially a two-way player in that regard. I don't think you'll see that. I don't think NBA teams want to have a roster of 25 or so. But I think even with how it works now, I think it would be in the NBA's best interest to essentially put that money out there, because you're going to get better competition. You're going to get better, you know, you're going to get guys who are, I mean, look, Brad Wanamaker, who went overseas out of Pitt, and now look at the Boston Celtics bringing back from overseas, right?
Right.
That's the kind of player that needs to be able to stay in America, play however many years, mature into a fine ball player while making decent money, and then get signed by a team. That's what they need. They need that type of player to be able to do that. Or I just don't see it ever being the option that a player looks at as first coming out of college if they can't make the NBA.
Right.
Or coming out of high school, I should say. It's never going to be that priority unless these guys can make, you know, a decent living.
So as I said earlier, Chris and I we've already had this hour-long conversation, but we're going to break it up into two parts, and we're going to give you tomorrow the NCAA. And Chris and I are in agreement that the NCAA is a corrupt organization that is making $1 billion off of the players that are making nothing. And so we'll get into that tomorrow. So for now, I hope you enjoyed this show. We'll get into that tomorrow. And you should subscribe so you can get that tomorrow whenever I post that tomorrow. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast. Search for Locked On Celtics wherever you get your podcast. If you are a subscriber, a 5-star rating, because we are giving you, like Millie said, so in depth, we might do an hour about the G League. This is the hour about the G League. We're doing it. That's how in depth we are. So give us that 5-star rating. Give us that good review. And tell your friends to listen to the Locked On Celtics podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.